Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Yud Aleph. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilun Nishmat Yamila Bat Yehuda, dedicated by her son Yehuda ben Shemuel. Yamila Bat Yehuda, Ruach Hashem Tanihena began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is also being studied. Leilu Nishmat Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanihena began Eden. Amen. We are beginning on Daf Yud Aleph, three lines from the top. Ve'amar Rabba Bar Mahsaya. Amar Rav Chama Bar Guria. Amar Rav. Kol Ir Shegagoteha Givohin Mebet HaKeneset Lesof Hareba. שנאמר לרומם את בית אלוהינו ולעמיד את חורבותיו. And the end of that pasuk says ולתת לנו גדר ביהודה ובירושלים. Rav is teaching today that any city that the roofs of its homes are taller or higher than the Bet Knesset and the synagogues of that city, at the end of that city, it is going to be destroyed. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Ezra, "Leromem et bet Eloheinu." We have to elevate the house of God, meaning the house of God must be on high. And Rashi tells us, "Val yedeh ken," by doing that, "Zachinu," we will be zochet to the end of the pasuk that says, "Latet danu gader bihuda." And then Yehuda will be protected, as if it is fenced. That'll give protection to the city, implying that if the synagogue is not the tallest building in the town, so then becomes subject to lack of protection. So the Gemara says, "V'hani mile bebatim." This is only talking about the homes. "Anab bekiskuse ve'ibrure." Kiskuse would be like fortresses. Ve'ibrure would be the towers. Let lan ba. There is no concern. Why? We're only talking about over here of roofs that the people used to use. Just to go up on the roof, and they were flat roofs, and they were able to sit on them and do different work on them. And therefore, that's only the houses, the homes. But fortresses and these other type of tall buildings that were not necessarily used, so therefore, even though they're higher than the Bet Knesset, it's okay. So then you shouldn't even have a whole discussion over here about our homes having these sloped roofs, so therefore they're not so usable. And no one goes up to the roof unless you're fixing the roof, but they're not functional, so therefore that is one of the leniencies in a city, to have a house that's taller than the synagogue if it is, let's say, a sloped roof. Amar Rav Asher, Ana avde lemata mahsaya delo harba. Rav Asher says, I saw to it that the city of Mata Mahsaya will not be destroyed. Meaning, he saw to it that the homes would not be taller or higher than the synagogues. He says, I was responsible for the city of Mata Mahsaya not to be destroyed. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Va harba. But Mata Mahsaya was ultimately destroyed. So the Gemara says, "Me'oto avon lo harba." Yeah, but it wasn't destroyed because they built their homes higher than the synagogues. It was destroyed for another reason. Ve'amar Rava bar Mahsaya, amar Rav Chama bar Guria, amar Rav. Tachat Yishmael, ve'lo tachat Nochri. Jesus, if a person has to be a servant to one of the nations, he's better off being a servant to someone that descends from Yishmael. It'd be like an Arab. Ve'lo tachat Nochri. But not to a Gentile that emanates, that descends from Edom. Edom would be a descendant of Esav. As she explains, because those descendants are more cruel. And therefore, if one has to be a servant to them, he's going to suffer more. Gemara says, Tachat Nochri, ve'lo tachat Haver. A person is better off being a servant of a Nochri, of somebody that descends from Edom, than to be a servant of somebody that descends from the Persians. And as she says, it's from Mibnei Parsiim, from the Persian descent. Tosfot has a different explanation. He says they're really not from Persia, but they're from a group of people that live in Persia. Tachat Chaber, better to work for somebody that descends from Persia, velo tachat Tamid Hakam, and not to serve a Tamid Hakam. Why? Because if the person disrespects the Tamid Hakam in his service, and the Tamid Hakam gets upset at him, and he might say something to him, so Barmin now the words of a Tamid Hakam have bearings, and God forbid it could be dangerous for him. That she says, Im yaknitenu yanishenu. If the servant doesn't treat the Tamid Hakam right, he does something wrong, so therefore the rabbi is going to punish him. The Gemara concludes and says, Tachat Tamid Hakam velo tachat yatom v'almana. Better to be a servant to a Tamid Hakam than to a orphan or a widow. Because since the orphans and the widows, they're downtrodden, and their tears are very mitsuya, they're very common, they're very commonly offended, and they cry, and they're very sensitive, and therefore God answers their prayers. So if you're working for them, and you do something wrong to them to cause them to get upset, God forbid that can have negative ramifications to the servant. So therefore I say, you're better off working for a Tamid Hakam than to a Yatom v'almana. V'amar Ava bar Machsaya, Amar Avchama bar Guria, Amar Rav. Kol choli, velo choli me'ayim. Any sickness, choli Rashi says is chole aruch. That's like a chronic disease, a long drawn out disease. Haminavna, that causes the person's body to deteriorate, veholech, he gets progressively weaker. So he says, any holy is better than lo holy mehayim, but not intestinal problems. Intestinal problems is the worst chronic sickness. Kol ke'ev, any ache, that she says, that's an ailment that comes and goes, like a toothache. Kol ke'ev, all ailments, velo ke'ev lev, but not ailments of the heart. That would be the worst. Kol mihush. Mihush is a very, very a slight discomfort. And again, that comes from time to time. Velo mihush rosh. But not a headache. The headache would be the most severe of the mihushim. Kol ra'a. Any evil in the world. Velo isha ra'a. But not a bad wife. The Mefarshim point out that if a person marries a lady with bad character, she could be the source of much trouble for him in this world, and that could be the most debilitating trouble that he has in his life. And therefore, the Gemara Erubin says, Shelosha, Gemara Erubin Daf Mem Aleph, Shelosha En Ro'in Pene Gehinam. There are three people that do not see Gehinam. One is somebody that suffers diktuke aniyut, somebody that suffers from poverty, the chole me'ayin, somebody that suffers from intestinal problems, the adishut, or somebody that has problems with the government, the yesh omrim af mi sheyesh lo isha ra'a. And some say somebody that also has a isha ra'a, he is safe from Gehinam because he gets his Gehinam in this world, and therefore it exempts him from the other form of Gehinam. In any event, the Gemara continues, Amar Rabba bar Machsaya, Amar Rav Hama bar Guria, Amar Rav, Im yiyu kol hayamim diyo, if all the oceans would be ink, Va'agamim kol mosim, and all the reeds, agamim, the reeds in the rivers, would be kulmosim, would be quills to write. That's what they used to write with a quill. Veshamayim yiriot, and all the heavens would be parchment. Vechol bene adam lavlarin, and all the human beings would be scribes. So you have an unlimited amount of ink, an unlimited amount of quills, parchment and scribes, and maspikim lichtov, they would not have a, they would not suffice to write halala shel reshut, the depth of government, which means to run a government is so intricate and so complex, and there's so many calculations that have to be made on a daily basis. Like Rashi says, for example, a king has to be involved in so many different subjects in one given day. For example, he has to deal with taxes, he has to deal with wars, and he has to deal with legislation. And each one of those is complex on its own, but he must deal with it in one day. So he's saying the depth and the complexity of government, especially the leaders of government, one could write an endless amount of talking about these intricacies. Me'ekira, where do we know this from? Where's the pasuk? Amar Rav Mesharshia. So Rav Mesharshia quotes a pasuk from Mishneh that says, Shamayim larum, as high as the sky, va'ares la'omek, and as low as the ground, underneath the ground, ve'lev melachim en hayaker, the hearts of kings, there is no limit, there is no end. Now the Mefarshim explain, what do we have to know this for? So someone explained, and the Hidushi Aran says, v'nafka mina she'en kedai le'tavot l'shulchana. Nafka mina is, there is no a reason why somebody should have a desire to go into government. It's a difficult job. There's a lot of things that have to be done on one given day, and therefore nobody should be jealous or have a desire to have such a job, even though there might be kavod attached to it. The person, the president, has a lot of honor. However, it's not an easy job at all. According to the Sfat Emet, he says that it's coming to tell you ma gedolim kochotav shel basar v'adam. It's just trying to show you the potential of man, what man is capable of doing. And a man is able to make such decisions on a wide array of topics on any given day. And some say that it's really coming to give a remez to say, shlirishut darush omek lev gadol kokach. To be, let's say, a leader of a country, government, you need to have a lot of depth. Ubeemet en lazot. The Gemara is saying the opposite, and they don't have it. They don't have that ability to make decisions on such a wide array of subjects. Lekach lo yetem meducha ele lemelech malchei melechim hakadosh baruch hu. Therefore, we're better off under the kingship of God, because only God is able to be as such to have the unlimited depth to make all decisions in running the world. Comes the Gemara and says, Ve'amar Rava bar Machsaya. Amar Rav Chama bar Gurya, Amar Rav, Yafe ta'anit lahalom ke'esh la'ne'oret. Fasting is good following a bad dream, like fire is to ne'oret as flax, which means, the way the Baal Shem explains, ne'oret is the bad part of the flax. Just like a fire destroys the ne'orit, will get rid of the ne'orit, which means it catches very quickly and disintegrates it, so too a fast following a bad dream is able to negate the badness of that dream. We call that a ta'anit halom. So the Gemara says, Ve'amar Rav Chisda ubo bayom. But Rav Chisda said it only has success, it only works if it's that day. Meaning the night, after the night he had the dream, the following morning he makes a ta'anit. Ve'amar Rav Yosef afilu b'Shabbat. Even if it's on Shabbat, meaning he had the bad dream on Friday night, so then he would fast on Shabbat. Rabbi Yoshua bere derav Idi ikla' lebe Rav Asher. Rabbi Yoshua found himself by the house of Rav Asher. Avdele igla tilta. So they made for him what's called Igla Tilta. That she says it's the third calf from the womb. Which means when the cow gives birth, that she tells us here that the most tasty of its children is the third one. Because the mother is still weak in the, when it gives birth to the first two, but it becomes strong and healthy by the third one, and therefore they used to call it Igla Tilta, the third Egel from the womb. Rashin Erubin has a different interpretation. He says it's an egel, it's a calf that was grown one third of its maturity, and then they slaughter it. It seems the meat at that point, when it's just one third of its maturity, of its growth, so that meat is, let's say, more tender or more tasty. In any event, they made eglat tilta. Amru le, so they told Rabbi Yoshua, let'om mor midi. Why don't you taste something? Why don't you eat something? Amar lehu b'ta'anit yativna. He says, no, I'm fasting today. Amru le, ve'lo savar le'mor le'ad Rav Yehuda, da'amar Rav Yehuda, love adam ta'anito uporeya. Didn't you hold, don't you hold of Rabbi Yehuda's rule that says a person could borrow from his fast and pay back? Which means, if an opportunity presents itself, like today we have a Saudah, so you could say, okay, I'm going to eat today, and I'll make up my fast on another day. So comes again and says, Amar le ta'anit halomu. Now this is not any fast, this is a fast that I'm doing because of a bad dream. ואמר רבם על מחסייה אמר רב חמה בר רב רב בר גוריה אמר רב יפה תענית לחלום כי יש לנעורת. That he thought that a fast for a bad dream is as effective as fire is to burning the flax. ואמר רב חסדה ובו ביום. And רב חסדה thought that it has to be the following day. ואמר רב יוסף אפילו בשבת. And Rabbi Yosef said, even on Shabbat, to show you how severe it is to make the ta'anit the next day, it's even on Shabbat. So therefore, I don't have an option of Rabbi Yehuda to be loveh uporeya, because this fast must be done the following morning. Comes the Gemara and says, V'im itchilu en mafsikin. Mafsikin, the Kiryat Shema, and the Mishnah concluded, V'en mafsikin, mafsikin. We learned in our Mishnah that a person should not involve himself in certain melachot before the time of mincha. However, we said, v'im itchil, if he began these melachot, and the Gemara explained to us in detail what is considered hathala to all these melachot, so then we said, en mafsikin. So then you're able to continue the work, and after you finish, you'll pray mincha. So long as you don't miss the time of mincha, of course. So it says, ve'im itchilu en mafsikin. That was the lashon of the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah says, mafsikin kiryat shema, ve'en mafsikin mitfilah. That you must stop, seemingly, if you started these work, or you started these things, the haircut, going to the bursiki, going to the minchas, if you started it, you must stop to read the kiryat shema. However, en mafsikin mitfilah. But you don't have to stop for tefillah. So the question then is, why does the Mishnah repeat? How many times should the Mishnah tell us in mafsikin tefillah? You said it already. Why does it have to say it at the end in mafsikin tefillah? So that's going to be the Gemara's question. It seems that the Mishnah is repetitious. So comes the Gemara and says, we learned this already in Mafsikim Nitfila. We learned it in the Resha. We learned it in the beginning, the opening statement, the beginning statement. In Mafsikim. So the Gemara says, Sefa Atan Devre Torah. The end of the Mishnah is not discussing when a person is involved in those melachot that we discussed. We're discussing if a person is involved in Devre Torah. As if the Mishnah is saying, if somebody's learning, he has to interrupt his learning for Kiryat Shema, but he does not interrupt his learning for prayer. So the question is, does that mean if a person has a Shi'ur, and he's studying Torah, so his Shi'ur supersedes the prayer, he can miss Tefillah? That's what the Mishnah is saying. En mafsikim mitfilah. And we're talking about when a person is studying. So the Gemara says, "Detanya," because we learned in the Braita, "Haverim shayu oskim b'Torah." Let's say you have Tamidei Chachamim that are studying Torah, mafsikim the Kiryat Shema. Yes, they stop the Kiryat Shema, which is the Oraita. Kiryat Shema is a positive commitment from the Torah, like it says in the pasuk, "Ubshokbecha, ubkumecha." So for the Oraita of Kiryat Shema to accept upon themselves all Malchut Shamayim, they have to stop. The end of seeking the tefillah. And look at that, they do not stop for tefillah. Amar Rabbi Yohanan, but Rabbi Yohanan explains, Lo shanu ela kegon Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai v'chaverav. We're only talking about the caliber of Talmid Hakam like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Why was he special? Shetoratan umanutan. Their vocation and only vocation was Torah, which means they didn't do anything else. So somebody that's totally committed to a exclusive Torah lifestyle where all they do is just study Torah, then already Torah even overrides the obligation to pray. Aval kegon anu, but people like us, mafsikin kriyat shema v'letfilah. So any scholar that's less than the Mishra Ben Yochai, it is devotion to the Torah, they must indeed stop for Kiryat Shema and stop for Tefillah as well. Now even according to the Bishamon Ben Yochai, according to the way Harambam understands, that praying once a day is a mitzvah taseh min Torah. That's what Harambam learns, when the Pasuk says, Olobdo b'chol lebavchem, it's a mitzvah to pray once a day. So according to Arambam, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai would have to stop sometime during the day to pray at least once. Because just like we make him stop for Kiryat Shema Deoraita, you have to stop for Tefillah Deoraita. But for the rest of the Tefillot, he would just continue to learn. Now, based on this, we can understand a story that we learned in yesterday's Gemara. Yesterday's Gemara, we had a story where Rabbi Zerah was learning with Rabbi Yirmiyah. And the time of Tefillah came, and it was late. The time of Tefillah was almost passing, so Rabbi Yirmiyah ran to go pray. So Rabbi Zerah said the Pasuk of Mishle, Masir Ozno Mishimoa Torah, Gam Tefillato Torah. He rebuked them. So we questioned, why is he rebuking him? He's going to catch the minyan. So the simple explanation, Tosfot says, we could say he had more time. He didn't have to leave right away, so he considered him as if he's removing his ear from hearing Torah. So he said his prayer is abominable. But according to what we're saying now, Tosfot says you could say that Bizirah was considered Torato Umanuto. And therefore, he was saying there's no obligation to go pray. This is considered Torah as our primary vocation. Comes again what it says, Ve'atanya, but didn't we learn? Keshem She'en Mafsikim Netfilah, Kach En Mafsikim Nekiriyat Shema. We have another statement that says that just like we don't stop for Tefillah, you don't stop for Kiryat Shema as well. So what are you telling me over here that if a person is Torato Umanuto, so he has to stop at least for Kiryat Shema. But we have a statement over here that says you don't even have to stop for Kiryat Shema. You know what it says? Kitane Ahi Bi'ibur Shana. Now that's talking about making the leap year, which means every so often, the rabbis would get together, seven rabbis would go to a certain attic, they would call it the Aliyah, which is a private area, and they would make calculations, mathematical calculations, to see if the year is worthy to make a leap year, to add an extra month, meaning to add a second Adar. Part of those calculations were in order that Pesach falls out in the spring. And that's based on knowing exactly when the different seasons begin and when they end in order to know if adding an extra month will alleviate it or not. Plus, there's other calculations involved. So therefore, they did not want to interrupt that session because of its importance, because the holidays are all based on their decision. Therefore, since it's a very important meeting, They did not interrupt that meeting, not for Tefillah and not for Kiryat Shema. Because even if their deliberations went through the Zman of Kiryat Shema, so they would miss it. They would be patur. Because making the leap year is that important. And the Gemara says, the Amar of Adab Rahaba, Vechen Tanu Sabed de Hegronya, the elders of Hegronya taught, Amar Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzadok, Keshayinu Oskin Be'ibur Shana Be'Yavne. Lo, we used to be involved in making the calculations of a leap year in Yavne. Lo Ayinu Mafsikin Lo Lekriyat Shema Ve'Lo Letfila. We went through, we didn't stop not for Tefillah, and not for Kriyat Shema. And now we start the new Mishnah. Lo yetze achayat b'machato samuch l'hashecha, shem yishkach v'yetze. Our Mishnah now discusses some things that are forbidden on Erev Shabbat. One of these things that are asur on Erev Shabbat is a tailor should not go out and carry his mahat. His mahat is his needle. What are we concerned? That he might forget, and then he might end up carrying it on Shabbat itself. So the rabbis made a gezerah on Erev Shabbat that he cannot carry this lest he forget and carry it on Shabbat. Second case, ve'lo ha-lablar be'kul moso. Nor the lablar, the scribe, do we allow him to carry his quill, that's his pen that he writes with. We do not allow him to carry it on Erev Shabbat, lest he forget that he's carrying it, and he's going to end up carrying it on Shabbat itself. Now, Tosafot has a question over here. We have a rule, actually we're going to see a machloket between Abaye and Rava, regarding, do we make what's called a gezerah legezerah? Abaye says, we do make gezerah legezerah. What does gezerah legezerah mean? We forbid something, rabbis forbid something, that means they made a gezerah, to something, because it might lead to something that is only rabbinically forbidden. That's called making a gezerah to eliminate coming to make an isur d'rabbanan. So it's really two d'rabbanans. You're making a rabbinical decree to stop something from happening, which even if you did it, would only be rabbinical. So according to Abaye that says, you do make gezerah l'gezerah, this Mishnah can be explained very simple. Because really, when a person is carrying something on Shabbat, let's say Erev Shabbat, he's carrying his quill, and then he forgets that he's carrying it. So when you forget that you're carrying it, we learned that's not considered in Isud Oraita. On Shabbat, you need what's called Melechet Machshevet. You have to have intent, at least that you know that you're doing a Melacha. Here, when he's making the Akira now on Shabbat, he doesn't realize that he's making an Akira. He doesn't realize that he's even carrying something. That would not be asur midoraita. So it comes out, we're forbidding something on Erev Shabbat that might lead to something that at worst would only be isur the Rabbanan. So that's the gezerah again. So according to Abaye, this works out. But Tosfot says, what about according to Rava that says, en gozrin gezerah legezerah? So how is he going to explain this Mishnah? So Tosfot explains in a rare case as follows. And I read the end of the Tosafot. Ela shema yishkach et ha-ma'at la-tzni'o ad she'ye Shabbat. We're concerned that we don't want him to carry the ma'at or the quill on Erev Shabbat because he might come to forget to put it away before Shabbat comes. Ulebesof k'she'yizkor et ha-ma'at, and when he finally remembers that he has to put the ma'at away, Yishkach Shu Shabbat. We're concerned that at that point he's going to forget that it's Shabbat. So therefore when he's carrying this ma'at, he's actually doing Melechet Machshevet, which means he knows he's carrying a ma'at. He made a full-fledged akirah knowing what he's doing, and then he made, let's say, a hanacha, it's just that he forgot it's Shabbat. And that's called Shogeg. But the case of Shogeg is considered Hayav. That's Asur, Minatura is Hayav Korban Chatat. So Tosafot has to make a case where it'll be a Deoraita. It'll be a Deoraita where he knows he's carrying, but he just forgot that it's Shabbat. So the Gezerah is, we don't want the guy to carry the quill on Friday. Why? Because he might forget to put it away before Shabbat. And now what's going to happen? Shabbat's going to enter. He's going to remember that he's carrying this quill. So he knows he's carrying the quill. But what? He forgot that it's Shabbat. Now, forgetting that it's Shabbat, so he did an Isur Deoraita Bishogeg. But it's Isur Deoraita. So therefore, it's not a Gezerah LeGezerah. It's a Gezerah to something that can be a Deoraita case. Comes the Mishnah and continues. Ve'lo yafle et kelav. A person should not de-louse his clothes. Meaning, if a person, let's say, has lice in his clothes, there was a certain procedure that they used to do to take out the lice. Now, there is different ways to understand this Mishnah, because the next line of the Mishnah says, "Velo yikra le'or hanir," and a person should not read on Shabbat, of course, now we're talking, by the light of a candle, of an oil candle, because we're concerned that the oil might not draw properly, and unintentionally a person might come to flicker the wick in order that the oil draws nicely, and that would be considered havara. That would be considered making a fire. So we understand that, lo yikra le'or haner, but someone will learn that both statements are connected, meaning not only shouldn't you read to the light of the candle, but you should also not de-louse your clothes to the light of the candle. Which means you read it, lo yaflet kelav ve'lo yikra le'or haner, which means it's said together. Both things should not be done to the light of the candle, and the reason would be is because she might come to flicker the candle. Others are going to learn that these statements are independent, and as we're going to learn in the Gemara. The Mishnah concludes, Be'emet Amru. In truth they said. Now, whenever it says Be'emet Amru, the Gemara Baba Metzi'ah says, Kol Be'emet Amru Halakahi. Anytime it says Be'emet, it's Halakha. And Rashi says in Metzi'ah Daf Samich, Halakha Pesukahi Lelo Cholek. Which means it's Halakha that's no argument. Everybody agrees to. In the Yerushalmi, in Kilayim, it says, Kol Be'emet Halakha Moshe Mesinaihi. Whenever it says Be'emet, it's actually Halakha Moshe Mesinai. In any event, the Mishnah says, Be'emet Amru, Hazan Ro'e, Hechan Tinokot Kor'in, Aval Hu Lo Yikra. The Hazan is able to look and see where the children are reading, but he himself cannot read with them. What are we talking about? Rashi. Let's read the Rashi together. A Hazan. Hazan HaKeneset. Who is this Hazan? It's not talking about the Hazan, the cantor. It's more like the Misader, the one that invites the people up to the Sefer Torah. The custom was that they used to invite them up from before Shabbat, in order that they can, let's say, prepare the reading, because in the olden days, everybody that would go up to the Sefer would read for themselves. So they would invite them from before. So that she says, Hazan HaKenezet HaMakre Shiv'a HaKor'im BaTorah. So he would invite the seven people up to the Torah. U'pe'amim she'ene yodeya hechan sirichin likrot le'mahav. And sometimes the Hazan himself does not know where they're supposed to read from, which perasha, what the breakdown of the aliyot are, which means, so he goes to where the children are learning on Friday night, and he peeks over to see the humash, to see exactly what perasha they're open to, in order to see exactly where the reading is supposed to be. Now the children would read to the light of the candle in the synagogue. So he would cheat. That's how he would know which parasha they're up to. So they're saying, well, the Hazan could look over the shoulders just to peek to see where the children are learning up to, but he cannot read with the children. So again, we're concerned that he's going to read the Orah Ner, and that's going to cause him to flicker. Hazan melamed tinokot. A Hazan over here is referring to somebody that teaches children how to read. He shows them, you're going to read from here to here. So he's allowed to, let's say, show them where they're going to read and show them their parts, so to speak, but he's not allowed to actually read with them by the light of a candle. Now, why would we call these people Hazanim? So the Mefarshim explain that because it comes from the word Hoze. Hoze is a seer, somebody that sees, which means when you're looking over to the point where the children are going to be, he's looking. So Hazan comes from the word Hoze, to look. He's a looker. Comes the Gemara and says, Mishnah concludes, Keyotzebo, similarly, Lo yochal azav im azava. mepene hergel avera, which means just like we said different restrictions in this Mishnah, we don't want a person doing things because it might lead to sin. Similarly, somebody that is a zav or a lady that is a zava, that is, that they had a certain emission out of their body that renders them tameh. By a man it's called zav, by a lady it's called zava. So they don't want these people to eat together, because if they eat together and sit at the same table, so they're going to be alone, and that could cause them to make an avera, that can cause them to make sin. Now of course, that she says not only a zav and a zava, but even a tahor with a zava would be forbidden to sit down at the same table, because it can also lead to avera. So the Mishnah is concluding with another form of like a restriction that they did not allow them to do, lest they come to sin. Now she says, because they're secluded, it seems they're eating alone. Yavol lebaol zava, he might come to cohabitate with a zava. Shehi bekaret, that's punishable by karet. Forbidden to be with a zava. It's like a nida, and therefore they did not allow them to eat alone and secluded. Comes the Gemara, Tenan Hatam. We learned in the Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Erubin. Lo ya'amod adam birshut hayachid v'yishte birshut harabim. A person should not stand in the private domain and drink from the public domain. Which means, let's say the well of water or the area of water is in the shut harabim, so he's going to lean over, let's say, and the glass is there, and he wants to take the water and drink. So technically he's not really doing anything wrong, because his body technically is over the Rishut Harabim. But they don't want him to do that. Rishut, the first case is Rishut De'ayin V'yishtim Rishut Harabim, or the opposite. Rishut Harabim, or if he's standing in the public domain, V'yishtim Rishut Yachid, and to lean over and drink in the Rishut Yachid. Aval im ichnis lo shoviru bo lemkom shu shote mutar. However, if he puts his majority of his body over into the domain where he's drinking, then it's permissible. Now, what's the gizet over here? We're worried that if he doesn't put his body over into the domain, the majority of his body, he might come and bring the cup back to him. Which means if you just tell the guy to lean over into the other domain, drink the water, put the cup down and come back, technically he didn't do anything wrong. You're in one domain where you're doing the drinking. However, what are we concerned? He might lift up the cup to drink, and then what? He might pull it back towards him. If he pulls it back towards him, that can already be isur, because he's going from one domain to the other. So they said, but if his whole body is leaning over in that domain, we don't make a gezerah. Then already it's permissible. So the Mishnah concludes and says, v'chen begat. And the same thing applies to a gat. If you look at the Pirush Chai in the picture 139, so you see what it is a gat. Gat is like a cistern that you have in the, let's say, Rishut Yachid. So the Mishnah is saying the same thing applies to a gat. If the water is in such a domain, such an area, it's sitting in the cistern. So again, if the majority of your body is in that domain, you can drink. If not, then you can't. So the question was asked in the Bet Midrash, Karmelit Mai. You told me about it in Rishut Yachid, you told me about it in Rishut Rabbim. What about sticking your body in a Karmelit? That's in the rabbinical domain. Does the same laws apply? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, hihi. Abaye said, yeah, it's the same thing. What's the difference? Rava Amar, what do you mean? He gufa gezera. The anani kumin exor gezera de gezera. Rava comes along according to his opinion. We learned earlier that Rava holds you don't make gezera de gezera. Even if you would take from the Karmelit out into the Rishut Rabim, it's only rabbinical. So now you're going to tell me we're going to forbid you to stand over the Karmelit because you might come to take the cup out. Even if you take the cup out, it's only midrabanan. So that is a gezera de gezera. So Rava says, no, it's not asur. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, hold it. I'll prove it to you that it's asur. Mina aminala. Where do I know this from? Deketani vechen begat. because the Mishnah said, so too this applies to a gat. So Abaye analyzes, my gat, what domain is the gat? Irishut yachid tanina. If it's Rishut yachid area, the gat, we learned already that a person cannot go from Rishut Rabim to Rishut yachid. We learned that area already. Irishut Rabim, and if you want to tell me the gat is a Rishut Rabim area, tanina. We learned that also, that you cannot go over the Rishut Rabim, because you might take the cup into the Rishut Yachid. So what area is the gat? El alav karmelit. Must be when the Mishnah said v'chen begat, the gat was a karmelit area. And what was the Mishnah saying? That just like you can't drink in a Rishut Yachid, or in a Rishut Rabim, so too you cannot drink in a karmelit area, lest you might take the cup and bring it back. So Abiyah says, I have a Mishnah that's supporting me, the two words, v'chen begat. Rava amal. Rava says, no. V'chen begat le'anyan ma'asir. When it says v'chen begat, it's not talking about anything of the laws of Shabbat. The words v'chen begat are a totally different subject discussing the laws of ma'asir. Let's review the laws of ma'asir. From the Torah, one is obligated to give, let's say, his entitlements, 10% to the Levi. Now let's say this gat was filled with wine. Wine is one of the commodities that you're obligated to give your ma'asir. Now, the law is that according to the Torah, you only have to give ma'asir once the commodity is in its final state. The gat is a press. That's not the final process of wine. That's where it was pressed. They take the wine from the gat and they put it what's called a bor. That's where they store it, in the pit. So therefore, until they transfer the wine from the gat into the pit, min ha-Torah, there is no obligation of ma'asir. However, there is a rabbinical obligation to give ma'asir. But even midrabbanan, they only obligated when a person is, let's say, drinking from that gat in a permanent fashion, which we'll call it achilat keva, where it's more of a permanent drinking. But even if his drinking is only, let's say, a temporary drinking, so then even rabbinically the rabbis did not obligate you. So therefore, let's analyze our case. The ma'aser, the wine that's in the gat here, at best can only be hayav ma'aser midrabanan, because it was not put yet in the bor. So now it's only going to depend on how you're drinking. So when the Mishnah says v'chen begat, it means the following. When a person is leaning over the gat, and he's drinking the wine, that's considered drinking in a temporary manner. And therefore, just like on Shabbat, if a person leans over into a reshut, we said it's okay. So totally, when it comes to the laws of ma'aser, totally different item. When a person leans over the gat in order to drink, so that drinking is not going to be subject to ma'aser, because that's considered shtiyat aray. That's drinking in a temporary manner, and therefore you have no obligation. So Rava says, what are you talking, karmelit? No problem if you to drink in a karmelit. Even if your body is not fully extended over the karmelit, it's permissible. Because we're not worried that he might take out the cup. Because even if he takes out the cup, it's only the banan. I but it says v'chen begat. That's for the subject of ma'asir. And now the Gemara is going to quote a Mishnah. Ditnan, as we learned in the Mishnah, shotin ala gat. We have three opinions. The first opinion says you're allowed to drink over the gat. Ben ala hamin, ben ala sonen, upatur. Devrei Rabbi Meir. Now you have to remember, in the olden days, they used to dilute their wines. They used to dilute their wines with sometimes hot water and sometimes cold water. So Rabbi Meir says, no matter how you dilute your wine, whether you dilute it with hot water or cold water, bottom line, so long as you're drinking over the gat, it is patur from ma'asir. Now, where does dilution come into the picture? Because you could argue, once you dilute the wine, now it's considered that's the real way of drinking it. That's more like a shtiyat keva. You know, if you're just drinking it live out of the gut, it's okay, this is temporary drinking, it's nothing. But once already you start to dilute it, so now already you're drinking it in a permanent fashion. The Bimei says, no, doesn't matter. Even if you dilute it with hot water, cold water, doesn't matter. Patur from Maaser. That's the most lenient opinion. Second opinion. Rabbi El-Azhar b'Rabbi Tzadok Mechayev. He says, no. Once you dilute it in any fashion, that's considered now keva. And therefore, Hayav and Maaser midrabanan. Hachamim make a peshara, they make a compromise. Hachamim omrim, ala hamin hayav, ala sonen patur. If you dilute it with hot water, hayav and maaser. If you dilute it with cold water, patur. Why? Mepneshu ma'zir et amotar. Because he'll return the leftovers. Meaning, when you dilute it with cold water, and let's say he drinks from the cup, if he didn't finish what he has in the cup, he'll pour it back into the gut. Because since he diluted it with cold water, the cold water is not going to ruin when he pours back the leftovers into the gut. But if you dilute the wine in your cup with hot water, now already he's not pouring it back in. Because that hot water is going to ruin the wine that's in the gut. Therefore, when you dilute, what makes temporary according to the Hachamim? Temporary means you're taking a sip and you'll pour the stuff back. You'll pour it back into the gut. So when will the person pour it back into the gut to give it that shtiyat arai status? When you dilute it with cold water. Then you'll pour the leftovers back in. But if you dilute it with hot water, you're not pouring it back. Therefore, it's considered shtiyat keva. So you have three opinions. But bottom line, all agree that shtiyat arai is patur. The only machloket is what is considered shtiyat arai. So therefore, when it says in the Mishnah, Erubin v'chein v'gat, it's teaching you the law of Maaseh, that when one leans over, that's considered drinking it in an arai fashion, then you're subject to the machloket over here amongst, did you dilute it with hot or cold, etc. Comes again when it says, Tenan, we learned in our Mishnah, Lo yetzeh achayat b'machatos samuk l'hashecha, that the tailor should not go out with his ma'at, with his needle, samuk la'ashikah, close to Shabbat. Shimmi yishkach v'yetzeh. Because he might come out and carry it on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, my love, d'tehuba lo b'bigdo. Where is he holding this needle? We're assuming that he's holding it in his beged, which means they would take the needle, they would stick it in their, let's say, shirt. They would stick it through their shirt. That's the way they would carry it. So therefore, what do we see over here? This is a question on Rava, because Rava said we don't make a gezerah le gezerah. Now we know if a person carries something in his shirt, that's not considered normal carrying. The normal way of carrying something is in your hand. If you carry in a not normal fashion, it's only asur midrabanan. So therefore, Abaye is coming to ask on Rava and say, hey, our Mishnah, we're talking about, we're telling a guy you cannot carry your needle on Erev Shabbat. How's he carrying it? In his shirt. Because you might come to do it on Shabbat. Even if he does it on Shabbat in that fashion, since it's carrying not in a normal manner, it's only Isur, the Rabbanan. So you see from our Mishnah that you're making a Gezerah, the Gezerah. Gemara says, no, Rabbi can say no. No, who said that he's wearing it in his shirt? I could say that the Gezerah is don't carry it in your hand, because you might come to carry it in your hand on Shabbat, which is Isur Doraita. Who told you to say it's talking about when you're carrying it in your shirt? Oh, Tashema, lo yetzeh hayat b'machatot techubah lo b'bigdo. Oh, I have a clear statement. You can't go out with the needle that's stuck into your shirt. My love, be'erim Shabbat. It must be this is talking about when it says you shouldn't go out, means on Friday. No, ki tanyahi b'Shabbat. No, that statement that says you shouldn't go out with it in your shirt means on Shabbat. On Shabbat, that's considered carrying midrabanan. So they're telling you don't carry it in your shirt on Shabbat. Oh, so now you get some on the last braita. But didn't we learn in the braita? Lo yetzeh hayat b'machato techuba b'bigdo b'erev Shabbat im hashecha. Finished. Now you can't answer because the braita says don't go out with the needle that's stuck into your shirt on Friday. So that's it. Now already, what's the reason? Because you might end up doing that on Shabbat. Even if you do that on Shabbat, it's only Yisur, the Rabbanan. So you see you're being gozer, gezerah, the gezerah. So the Gemara says, Haman, you know, who's the author of that specific Braita? The Biyudai. That's the Biyuda. He has a special opinion. What's the Biyuda say? The Amar, Uman, Derech Umanuto Hayav. That a craftsman, if he carries it in the normal way that the craftsmen carry it, he is Hayav. Which means it seems that a tailor would carry his needle in his shirt. So let's say for normal people, you're right, that's not the normal way of carrying. If a regular guy would put it in his shirt, not Hayav, that's considered Shinui. But for a tailor, that's the way they carry it. So therefore for him, he's Hayav. So therefore what are they saying? A tailor should not put it in his shirt on Erev Shabbat, because if he's going to carry it on Shabbat, it'll be actually Deoraita. So therefore it's not a Gezerah, a Gezerah. Now where do we see the Biyudah's opinion? The Tanya. We have a Braita. Lo yitzea chayat b'machato atechubano b'bigdo. That's the first case. A person should not go out, a tailor, with his ma'at that's thrusted into his beged. Now again, the reason why they would do this, he would wear it in his beged, that as she explains, that was like an advertisement. He wanted everybody to know that he's a tailor. So how do you let everybody know you're a tailor? So you walk around with a needle in your shirt, so that's already a sign that what his profession is. Velo nagar. No, Nagar would be a carpenter, cannot go out with a ruler in his ear. Again, he would use it to make sure that the bricks are on a straight line, etc., or the wood, the planks are straight, so that we cannot wear the ruler in his ear. Now, normally wearing a ruler in your ear, that's not the normal way of carrying a ruler. Yeah, but if you're a carpenter, that's the normal way. Therefore, the Biyudah says he would not be able to do that. Velo sorek bimshiha. Shebeozno. A sorek, if you look at your picture 141, that's somebody that takes a bundle of thorns and he ties it together, like you see in 142, he takes a bundle of thorn, a thorn bush, and ties it up with a rope, and then he takes a garment and he hangs it up and he bangs the garment. It seems that makes the garment look more full. So it's a certain process that they do. So he's called a sorek. So how would you show that you're a sorek? You would take the string that you used to tie up this bundle of thorns that you would bang the garment with. You take the string, the rope, and you wrap it around your ear. So everybody would know that you're a sorek. So he cannot do that as well. That's considered the derech to carry. Velo gardi, the gardi would be the weaver, the ira shebeozno. Ira is cotton. If you look at your pictures in 144, 145, the weaver used to make garments and used to have a spool of thread. And that spool of thread used to throw it across the loom, in order to have the strings go across. Now, when he throws it across, so some of the spool lets out. But he doesn't want the spool to let out and unravel, so therefore he has to create a mechanism so it lets out in a normal fashion. So if you see in 145, what does he do? In the spool itself, he places some cotton in the opening where the spool comes out, where the thread comes out, so therefore it'll come out in a normal fashion. So what would they do, these gardis? They would take cotton and put it in their ear. So therefore, everybody would know that he's a gardi. So that's considered the normal way of carrying. Velo saba, a painter, bedugma shebesavaro. The painters used to take swatches on, let's say, a piece of wool, and they would put all the different colors, the black, the red, the different colors, they would put it on their shoulder, and they would walk out, and they'd say, which one do you want? You want kazu, which color do you want? Velo shulhani, a money changer, bedinar shebeozno. That's bedinar shebeozno, they would put the coin. They would put a coin, let's say, stick it above their ear. Say, wait a minute, no, this guy's a money changer. The im yatsa, and if they went out on Shabbat like that, patur aval asur divrei de bimeir. The bimeir says patur. Why? Because it's not the normal way of carrying. However, the biyuda omer uman derech umanuto hayav. So clearly, you see, the biyuda says, no, these guys are craftsmen, and this is the way that they carry, so therefore it's going to be hayav. Ushar kol adam patur. But you're right, everybody else that would carry in such a fashion would be patur. So therefore we could say that that braita that said you shouldn't go out on Erev Shabbat with the needle stuck in the shirt is a biyuda, because that really all this can come to a deoraita because he's an uman. Tanihada, we have a braita. Lo yitze hazav bekiso. Again, a zav is a person that has an emission, that's tamer. So what they used to do is they used to wear a sack. They used to wear like a kis. Kis is a sack. They used to put over there in that area in order to, let's say, collect the emissions that are coming out. So it's on Shabbat, lo yaseh azav bekiso. You should not attach that sack and wear it out in the Rishut Rabbim on Shabbat. V'im yatzav patur. But if he did it, patur. Meaning it's only asur, midrabbanan. Patur aval asur. Betanya idach. Well, we have another brayta that says lo yitze v'im yatsa hayav hatat. One says he shouldn't wear, but if he does wear it, he's considered hayav. So we have a machlok and a stira in baraitot. One brayta says patur aval asur, and one says hayav hatat. Amar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef answers la kasha, no question. Harbi meir, harbi yuda, which means, according to Rabbi Meir, he'll say, since that's not the normal way to carry a sack, to put it over there, so therefore this is considered carrying it bishinui. And therefore, even though, let's say for this guy, if let's say it's normal, but he holds that, let's say by the Uman, it was normal for the Uman to carry it over there also, but since it's not the normal way for normal, regular people to carry it in that fashion, it's considered shinui. So therefore the same thing, by the sack. And we'll say the opinion that says Hayav is a Biyuda. Since for him, for the Zav, it's normal for him to carry it this way, just like for the Uman, it's normal for him to carry it this way, therefore it's considered normal carry, therefore it's going to be Hayav. So we can answer the Braita, that the Braita that said Patur Rabbi Meir. Because we'll say that what, even though it's normal for him to carry it this way, we go after the people. It's not normal for the general populace to carry a sack like that, to attach it over there. So therefore, patur. According to the Biyud, I will say, no, this is the normal derech for him, and therefore that's considered normal carrying, and therefore be hayab. Amar le Abayes. Abayes says no. Imur de shamat de Rabbi Meir. When did Rabbi Meir say patur? Bemidi de rab haynu urhe. That it's not the normal way, meaning not even for the Uman himself. Which means that she points that even the Uman would normally carry the mahat in his hand. Once in a while, when he wants to advertise, so he would stick it in his shirt. So the Mimir was only talking in Acacia Patur, where the rest of the world never puts it in their shirt. And even the Uman himself, most of the times, doesn't put it in his shirt, carries it in his hand. And once in a while, to advertise, he puts it in his shirt. So that's when the Mimir said, Patur. But in a case where the Zav always wears it like this, that's considered maybe the Derech. And therefore even the Bimir will say, Hayav. Jeez, there's a big difference in the case of the Zav and his Kis and the Hayat with his Mahat. The Hayat with his Mahat, sometimes he puts it in his shirt. There the Bimir says, that sometimes doesn't make it the Derech. Therefore, you can be patur. But a Zav, he always wears the kis like that. Therefore, the Bimir will say, he'll agree that it's Hayav. And the Gemara proves it from logic. Because if you're not going to say this, according to your original answer, your first reasoning, let's say an amateur that carved out some wood from a bakat, from a log. Have a picture of that. 147. Yeah, and he has a kav. Kav would be like a, in this case, it's like a shoe, but it's a model of a shoe. So he wants to stick his leg in. Let's say he has a peg leg, so he needs to make like an indentation in this apparatus, this shoe-like apparatus, so he can stick the peg leg in. So he wants to carve out a little hole on the top of the shoe so the peg will fit in. But he's an amateur. So you're going to tell me what? The Shabbat Rabbi Meir, hachanameh de lo mehayev? Are you going to tell me according to Rabbi Meir that he's not hayav? Why? Because you'll tell me, since the normal way to do this is a professional makes it, and this guy's only an amateur, so you're going to tell me, since he's doing it in a different way of the normal way of doing it, you're going to tell me that he's patur? That's very hard to say, because then it comes out according to the Bimeir, the only people that are going to be hayav on Shabbat are umanim, are professionals. But you're going to tell me, if an amateur carves out a piece of a hole into a piece of wood, you're going to tell me, since that's not the normal way of people doing it, that means patur? Of course not. And when are you going to tell me, since for him, that's the normal way, that the way an amateur carves out, so that's going to be hayav. So therefore, we're forced to say that the Bimeir will agree that since it's the normal way for the Zav to carry this sack to this kis always, so therefore it's going to be Hayab. So the question then is, how do we answer the Braitot? One Braita said if he carries it Hayab, one Braita said he is Patur. We have no answer. She's to us. Everybody will say Hayab. Ela amar av menuna la kasha. Kan bezav baal shtei re'iyot, kan bezav baal gimel re'iyot. Now, sometimes the zav sees twice, two emissions, sometimes three emissions. In both cases he's tameh, and in both cases he has to wait 7 days, clean days, without having an emission, to be tahor. The only difference between a zav of two re'iyot and a zav of three re'iyot is three re'iyot, he has to bring a korban after his 7 days. That's the only difference. So we could say like this. A Zav that saw twice, when he puts the keys there, that's the normal way to put a keys there. You know why? Because he wants to check to make sure he doesn't become a three. A Zav of three. So he needs to put it there to see if anything collects. It's the derech for him to do it. So therefore, if he's a Zav of two, and he puts it there when he goes out on Shabbat, Hayav, because that is the derech. A Zav of three, what does he need it for? Which is, once you're a three, so therefore there's no purpose to really put the keys there to catch anything, because there's no difference between three or four or five. So therefore, that would be considered not the derech, and therefore you'd be patur. So again, what I want to say, the case of Hayab is a guy who saw two, and a guy that's patur is a guy that saw three. So the Gemara says, wait, my shena zav baal shtei re'iyot de Hayav. Why are you telling me that the zav that saw twice, if he carries the skis on Shabbat, is Hayav? Because he needs to check it. He may make a bedika on it. What's the normal derech? He says, wait, zav baal gimel namem v'ayel l'sfira. Which means, the guy who saw three, he must wait 7 clean days. Now, how do you know if they're clean days? He's got to wear a keys to check the keys every day to make sure nothing came out. So therefore, a zav of 3 days is also considered the derech. So therefore, he should also be hayav. So the Gemara says, lo netzrecha ela lebo bayom. No. When does a person who's a zav of 3 days, let's say, start his 7 clean days? He can only start his 7 clean days on the day after he saw the third emission. Which means the day that he saw the third emission is obviously not a clean day. That day doesn't count. Let's say he saw his third emission on Sunday. His first clean day is going to be on Monday. Now let's say his third emission was on Shabbat. So Shabbat really cannot be a clean day. So the case we're talking about, it was a Zav. Now let's say Shabbat morning saw his third emission. Shabbat afternoon, he wears the keys. For Shabbat afternoon, there's no purpose for him to wear this keys, because anyway, he cannot count Zayin Nikiin, because he saw on that day. So therefore, I can say the case where he's Hayav is talking about where he saw two. But then already he needs to wear it, because he's got to know if he's going to see a third one. It's a big difference. He's going to be a Korban or not. But the case where, that's his Hayav. The case where he's Patur is where he's a Zav of three scenes on the day that he saw the third one. For that day, there's no purpose to see, because even if the bag is clean, still you cannot count that as one of the Zayin Nikiim. So therefore, it's not the normal way to wear such a bag. It's for such a person on such a day. Which is on Sunday when he wears the keys, that's normal again, because now he's got his Kav Zayin Nikiim. But on Shabbat, the day he saw the third seeing, there's no purpose. So therefore, in that case, it's going to say, patur. Now, this is not going to be the final reconciliation of the Baita. This is actually, we're in the middle of a peace thing, but I was going to reject this answer and give other reconciliations to the Baita. But this is for today's daf. In the previous shiurim and in the upcoming shiurim, we are and have been referring to different pictures of the different cases that the daf is referring to. We are using a sefer called Perush Chai. And therefore, if our listeners want to purchase the Perush Chai and follow along as we announce the numbers in that book where these pictures are, it would be a tremendous aid in order to understand the cases more clearly.